Hello? Can you hear me?
Yep, can hear
you. Awesome. All right, Ed. Well, thanks for doing this Cry the Wolf Magazine interview. And so tell me what's going on in your world right now, today.
Well, right now, I'm a new dad.
Awesome.
And yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Can't complain, but so I've been focusing on that for a little bit, which, you know, been a lot of fun. You know, I mean, yeah. It's a whole different world. Life feels different, but in a whole different way, in a good way, of course.
Right.
But yeah, and I'm slowly going to get back into the film game and even the music game too. But primarily, I focused on film, and I'm also doing my very first autograph signing in a couple of weeks in two different towns in Southern California, so something to look forward to.
Nice. And that's where you're at now, Southern California?
Yeah. Okay. I live in Los Angeles.
Okay, all right. And what made you decide to go into film acting?
It's a long story because, you know, this story is what wanted me to do not just film but music too. And you know, I love telling people this story, like in other interviews I've done and like just people in general. Was when I was like a little kid, I was probably like maybe three, and I saw a movie called Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was like the most incredible. I think it's still to this day, it's one of my all-time favorite films, and you know, even to this day it still holds up for how good it is. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I saw Michael J. Fox playing guitar, and, like, I thought to myself, I want to do that. And I just thought it was, like, the coolest thing ever, like, him playing Johnny B. Goode and all that. And that was kind of, like, my first introduction to that, which, ironically enough, you know, one of Eddie Van Halen's demo tracks was also an introduction to guitar as well. So that was, like, how I kind of got me started of wanting to do acting as I got much older, as well as, you know, wanting to play music too. Mm-hmm. But that movie is what opened up, you know, my world to film and music.
Nice. Well, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
So obviously you've been in a few things. One of the things that stands out for me as a Mandalorian fan was that can you elaborate on what you did?
Yeah, and it's funny you mention that because the autograph signing that I'm doing in about a week and a half from now is actually for two Star Wars related events, actually, for you know, fans, whether if like they were Mandalorian fans or, you know, Star Wars fans in general, or just like any of like the spinoffs and all that. Yeah. So that's something I'm looking forward to. But like, so how that happened was before I had an agent, I was always submitting myself for work. I was self-represented, so I had to, like, you know, go out and look for the work myself. So one of the casting companies that my name was registered under, like, they had like a very vague description of what they were looking for. They claimed they needed bomber types, and I'm just thinking to myself, okay, I've got long hair, I've got a bit of a scruff, I could be a farmer. So I submitted to it, and it was gonna work multiple shooting days and all that. So I thought, you know, need the money, why not give it a try? And so I submitted to it, and then they in December 2018, they had said to me, are you available for a costume fitting this date, working all throughout, like, numerous shoot dates all throughout January 2019. And I was like, yep, I'll do it. Like, I instantly just said, yes, I'm interested.
Yeah.
They said, okay, we have you booked. And they said, we have you booked on the show titled Huckleberry. Like, they didn't say it was Star Wars. They didn't say it was The Mandalorian. They were hush-hush about it.
Huh.
And upon arrival, like, was when I then saw Lucasfilm on the side of a truck. And I was just like, Oh, wow. Shit. I thought it was like one Star Wars or two Indiana Jones related.
Yeah.
And so it was so cool. So I go inside, but before they brought us in, they said that we have to take your phones. And I was like, oh, so they're very serious about this. Because there's always been that one person, you know, that has ruined it for other people.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We're very secretive about this. So they had to sign like major non-disclosure agreements saying, do not leak anything. Do not say about what you saw. Do not talk about what you saw with anybody. Like, and so I go into the costume fitting and I see like all these very, you know, Star Wars, like, you know, like aisles of like Star Wars, like clothing, like armor and all that too. And I was just like, no way. And they're like, and then like, they were saying to me, you know what this is for, right? I'm like, I think I have an idea. And they're like, this is for, the new, Star Wars spinoff series that Disney is going to have their own streaming platform for. And I was like, wow. And this is before Disney Plus, I think, was even announced.
Wow.
So they had to fit me in a wetsuit because some of us had to stand in water and all that, which was not fun at times. So like, especially since we were shooting in January and even not far from the beach, Manhattan Beach Studios, like, and we were shooting it outdoors. January, it gets cold, especially near the beach in January in Southern California.
Yeah.
So anyways, like, this, before I was about to head out from my fitting and I was about to go get my phone, I then ran into Carl Weathers at my costume fitting. Wow. And I said to him, Carl, he's like, yes. Like, I think he was looking at me like as if, like, almost like, do I know you? But like, I think I just then said, oh, no, I'm a fan of your work. I grew up watching you in Predator, Rocky, and Action Jackson. When I told him Action Jackson, he had the biggest smile on his face and he shook my hand. He's like, my man.
Nice.
He's like, I don't think many people talk to him about Action Jackson or anything else he's done besides what he's most known for.
Right, right, yeah.
So, like, he had asked me, are you involved in the show? I'm like, yeah, I'm working on episode 4, apparently. He's like, oh, I'm not going to be in that episode, but you're going to have a lot of fun doing this. It's been great so far. I'm like, all right, well, anyways, nice to meet you, and hopefully I'll work with you on a set one day. He's like, yeah, you never know. You have a good day. And so, very quick, you know, all that is, but it was a very big moment for me to get to meet him and all that.
Yeah.
And so I remember, so then came like after the new year, like I had just flown back in from New York because I was visiting my family for the holidays at the time. And literally the next day after I flew in was right when we were just starting to work. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, like, we didn't know what we were walking into, really. Like, pretty much we were going to be told stuff's going to be blowing up all around us. There's going to be a lot of action, sweat and all that. I'm like, okay, cool. And like, and since there was a lot of hazardous things, you know, like the explosions and all this, we got paid a lot. Technically, we were pretty much, I think if anything, like, technically we were doing stunts. So yeah,
wow.
It was great. And I remember, I don't remember if it was the first day or the second day of shooting, they had the scene of where the AT-ST was shooting at us, like the thing that walks on two legs.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a scene, like, it didn't make it into the final cut, and I was very bummed, but it was a pretty funny experience. I remember I had to walk past the one actress, I had to run past the one actress, and I slipped and I fell into one of the ponds where one of the explosion charges was. I wasn't acting trying to get out of there. I was actually panicking. And then the explosions guy blew it up right behind me on purpose. Just to kind of get a natural reaction out of me. And then I saw the playback of the footage and I was like, if they don't use that, I'll be really pissed off.
Wow.
They didn't use it. But no, it was cool though. I still got a really great piece of footage of, you know, me shooting the blaster, which was really cool. And that was the one piece of footage I was hoping for when I knew that they placed me in front of the camera.
Yeah.
So there was that, and, you know, even like working with Bryce Dallas Howard, she was a sweetheart. She directed the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Gina Carano, despite like all that bad press that, you know, happened and all that, she was the biggest sweetheart to work with. She didn't treat anybody like they were lower or beneath her. She treated everybody like an equal. So, you know, I mean, yeah, like, people are entitled to believe what they want to believe with their views and all that. But, you know, as a human being and as a person, she was always cool to everybody. And, like, even all the other actors on set have said the same thing. She was always very cool to work with and very professional.
Yeah.
And the two guys that played the Mandalorian, Latif Crowder, who is a martial artist and a stuntman. He was doing all the, he does all like the fight stuff on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the gunslinging stuff is Brendan Wayne, John Wayne's grandson. And he's doing a lot of the body acting mainly. A lot of the time, Pedro Pascal's not in the costume. He was never on set when I was there. He was doing like mainly like the voiceover and all that. Brendan and Latif, they're so cool. And like Latif and even Gina and I, we were just standing and waiting we were like talking like a little bit about martial arts and all that, because like we're all martial artists and all that. And I was about to go get into martial arts at the time, so I had asked them, what is some of your tips and advice about getting into martial arts? Because I've been in the martial arts game for almost 3.5 years now. So like at the time I wasn't in it, but like I had asked them for advice and all that. And I had asked about Gina's professional fighting career and all that. So they had some really cool, they had some really great we had some great conversations. So that was a very memorable set. And the food was great too. Yeah.
Nice.
I think I had like a good 10 pounds out of food on that set.
Wow. Wow. Have you done movies or been in productions where it's not really as, how do I say, extravagant as something like that, where it's more low?
I've done independent films too. Last year, well, one movie that's coming out with Michael Jai White, I did stunts for Michael Jai White, who was Spawn, a new movie called MR9. It's an independent film, and I get to get shot in the head. I mean, it was an independent production, but still, everybody was professional on that set, and everybody was great and all that. And then, like, I also worked on another film last year. It still hasn't been released, with a guy named Patrick Kilpatrick, and he was the villain in the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie Death Warrant. He was also in Under Siege 2 with Steven Seagal. He was in Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And yeah, like the independent productions, you know, there's definitely a different vibe to them, but you know, at the same time, sometimes they've got enough of the budget to where they can cover everybody and all that. But obviously like the big budget stuff like Mandalorian, like you've got green screens, you've got like built movie sets and all that, whereas some like sets like the independent films are shot on location,
right
in like in an actual area. They're not like on a sound stage or like on a built up set and all that. So yeah, the difference between, in a lot of cases, some independent films, they can get the budget to build like a set or film on a sound stage, but in a lot of cases they're shot on location actually. But yeah, and you know, sometimes like even like micro budget stuff too and all that. But you know what, sometimes I look at it this way. I've worked on big budget stuff where I've dealt with some of the biggest assholes in the industry that were unprofessional and very, you know, unprofessional and all that. And I've worked on some of the most small budget stuff, very independent stuff, where I've met some of the greatest people in the world that I've kept in touch with. So, you know, normally I don't like to see and look at it entirely on like what the budget is. Right. I always like to see it as who am I working with, you know? Because, you know, this is the thing. In the end of the day, and I worked with him a couple of times, Jeff Garland from Curb Your Enthusiasm, and my wife and I went to go support one of his stand-up shows, and he remembered who we were. But one thing he said, and I couldn't agree more, no amount of money in the world is worth it if there's no joy in it or if it's a miserable experience, you know?
Right.
And he's got a good point with that.
Yeah, totally agree with that. So let's jump rails a little bit into the music end of it. So you recorded with Steve from Grim Reaper before he passed. And how did that come about?
Steve and I, we originally were just friends on social media. And then we had met for the very first time in person in I want to say it was late 2018 or early 2019, and Grim Reaper was playing at the Whiskey O'Go-Go. And I remember when he was just starting to meet fans, like afterwards, I then went up to him. He's like, "Hey, I know you." I'm like, yeah, we're friends on Facebook. I'm Ed Gage. He's like, "Oh yeah, Ed, how are you?" I'm like, "I'm great to finally meet you." And we became like big friends off the bat like that. We stayed in touch ever since. Nice. And I wanted to see him like the following year. I was going to try to go see him in late 2019, but I was doing a commercial for Gucci eyewear, actually, that I got, you know, I auditioned and got booked for.
Wow.
And so we were shooting all throughout like the night, so I didn't have a chance to go and see him. And I wanted to try to meet up with him before, but he wasn't going to be able to get to town until later in the evening. So yeah. But like, and then after that, I remember he was going to, even right before the shutdown hit, I saw like a flyer of Grim Reaper was going to be in the area and all that. And so I had every intention to go and see him, but then COVID hit, of course, you know, so everything got shut down and all that. But like we had kept in touch and we were always like supporting each other's endeavors, and for him to support what I was doing, you know, meant the world to me. And same with John Gallagher too. And John Gallagher and I, we've known each other for 10 plus years at this, like a whole fan turned friend and then turned colleague. September, we started recording this. And then messaged Steve and I said, hey Steve, I'm doing a studio cover of AC/DC's Dirty Deeds, Done Dirt Cheap, and would you be interested in doing guest vocals on it? He's like, yeah, buddy, I'd love to. And so, just like that, you know, he didn't say no, like, he didn't ask for details or anything like that. He just, right off the bat, said, yeah, he was interested.
Oh.
And then I had approached John about doing it, like, bass and backup vocals and doing the Angus scream at the end of the song, too.
Yeah.
So that's John at the end doing that. So I got to give him the credit for that. So what happened was I then said to John, hey, John, I'm doing a studio cover of Dirty Deeds, Done Dirt Cheap by AC/DC with Steve Grimmett's going to do guest vocals on it. Would you be interested? He's like, yeah, I'd love to. So they were all for it. They were all immediately on board just like that, which was great. And my bandmates, Derek Sedota and Nick Moran, my guitarist and drummer, I didn't tell them for a while that they were going to be on it. I wanted to surprise them because I know that they were fans of theirs too.
Yeah.
But like when it was taking a little bit more time than with like the recording process and all that, I then spoiled it to them. I said, Steve and John are actually going to be involved in the recordings. They're like, really? They were like excited for it, which is great. Because, you know, I mean, I wanted to give them something to look forward to. You know, I mean, they're great musicians and, you know, they stuck with me through thick and thin.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we recorded from, like, you know, pretty much all throughout late 2020. And then we went for, like, and then I had a friend of mine who was a very professional, you know, engineer, and he does really good mixing and all that. I had him mix the track, and I think we scheduled for, like, a digital release in February 2021. And then we then did a music video in August 2021, months later, and released that. So that was really great. And then the following year, later that year in late 2021, my wife and I went to see Raven. I hadn't seen Mark and John since before the pandemic hit. So to catch up with them was great. And then I caught up with them again this past September as well, in when they were on tour and they played in Santa Ana. The drummer's a huge wrestling fan, so Mike Heller. And Mike and I, we were talking because I did a movie with a couple of wrestlers from AEW a couple years ago as well. So we had some good conversations about that. And Rickman did, I think, Chris Jericho's, cruise with all the bands and all that.
Yeah.
About a year ago, I remember I had messaged Steve because I think he was booked to do a show with Timber Owens and the Three Tremors on they were going to be doing like a show in Los Angeles and like doing like a mini festival, like indoor festival kind of a thing with two stages.
Yeah.
But then I had hit up Steve and I said, hey, it would be great to see you. Let's definitely catch up with when you're in town and all that. And he said, yeah, buddy, if you'd love to, I would love for you to come up and sing See You in Hell with me. And I was like, honored. I would be so honored to do that with you. And for him to even approach me on that is something I'll forever be grateful for. But it was unfortunate, you know, the universe had other plans.
Yeah.
And I remember in August, I was visiting New York at the time. I was visiting my brother and my dad. And I think my brother and I had just got out of the movie theater. And just as we got into the car, I opened up my phone and the first post I saw, I think it was from, it was either Mantis or Abaddon from Venom and Venom Inc. They were like the first one to post like a public post about it. Oh. And I saw this picture and I was just like, oh no, please don't tell me that this is true. And I commented on it saying, please, can somebody verify this? Please tell me this isn't true. And I think it was either Abaddon or Mantis. They took a screenshot from Steve's brother's Facebook verifying it. And I just all out crying, you know, to develop a friendship and, you know, and even just getting to work with a guy like him, it meant the world to me. So it was pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It was very, like, it really hit me hard. And even, like, when I was telling my, like, my bandmates, and then even, like, John as well, I was like, Steve Grimmett just passed away. They were like, what? And they're like, what happened? I'm like, I don't know. All I know is that, like, you know, his brother made a post.
Yeah.
And it really hit me hard, because it's, like, one of those things, you know, it's one of those things you still kind of, when you lose somebody that, you know, you had, like, a good connection with, like, mm-hmm. that, you know, you kind of don't want to, like, you still, like, don't want to accept it, you know, even right. almost a year later, I kind of don't want to accept that he's gone. Even, like, other people I've worked with or, you know, been friends with, it's kind of one of those things you just don't, I don't think you ever really accept the fact that they're no longer here.
No, you probably never will, really. It doesn't really get any, but I mean.
Even going to that even going to that show that he was scheduled to play, I mean, because I'm a Ripper Owens fan, too.
Yeah.
So I at least wanted to go, because I already had the money for the ticket. I already paid for it to go support Steve anyways and Tim. And, yeah, it felt pretty bittersweet knowing that Steve wasn't going to be performing there. Mm. And I remember when I was telling, like, Sean Peck about it, saying, it's just, it feels weird that Steve's not performing tonight. Like, and he's like, yeah, man, I know. It sucks. We really miss the guy. And I'm like, Steve was just one of those people, you know, I don't think he really cared too much about, you know, the fame he got or, like, anything like that. I think he just had a love for music, and he just had a love for his fans. And, you know, it's very rare to find musicians that have such a love for their fans and, you know, are grateful for what they have. Because, you know, I won't drop names, but there are definitely musicians and even actors out there. They don't give two shits about their fans. And, you know, they take the biggest dumps on fans. They treat them like garbage, and they just, like, they more or less see their fans as just cash grab. And it's like, you can't be thinking like that. Because at the end of the day, without your fans, without your following, you're nothing.
Right, right. Know? Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. But they, you know, they're out there. I've talked to a few of them.
I believe.
You know, I'm not going to drop names either. But it, you know, it taints the whole music end of it. You know, you try to keep them separate.
Right.
But sometimes the personality just kind of overwhelms what they created.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And it's not even just the musicians, but even sometimes the fans in the scene as well. The fans in the scene as well. Like, it's just sometimes, like, they just, you know, don't, like, they can be very, what's the word? The fans that they have, like, are very, what do you call it? There's a word for it. Not conniving, but, like, you know, like, the fans can be just as, you know, malicious and cruel, too.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the thing is, I've seen it in their scene, and, you know, a lot of people have said, no, I don't see you as involved in, like, the music scene. I don't see you at many shows. Well, I mean, like, aside from being, like, a dad now, but, like, even before then, I didn't really go to, like, you know, many shows or anything. Like, you know, you have people that like to, like, say this and this about you for no reason. It's like, hey, you're being negative. I never did anything to you.
Yeah.
Are you making such comments about me like this? And then it's like, it's almost like it's competition in a way, but at the same time, it's just like, you know, some people, like, not even just people in the scene, but in life in general, people just have a very bitter and miserable mindset. And it's like, well, you know, if you're not happy with life, make a change. Don't be negative and take it out on other people, you know?
Yeah.
The thing is, in the music scene, you know, of all the, like, the scenes that the communities I've been a part of, whether it be the film industry, the music scene and industry, and let alone the martial arts community, the one scene that I've seen the most, you know, and I hate to say it, because, you know, it's like, we're all in this for the love of music, but the one place that I've seen the most toxic and negative people is, in fact, the music scene. And it's like, this should be a place where we're all coming together for the same purpose. It shouldn't be a place where everybody's at each other's throats or, you know, saying this and this about people. And it's like, dude, we're here for the same reason. Why, like, what are you doing that for? Like, why are you treating people like that?
Mm.
And it was funny. It's sad because, you know, I dealt with a psychotic stalker for 4 years straight until I caught on to who the person was. And it was somebody from the music scene.
Wow.
You know, like, I had, like, an attachment to the music scene, and I was thinking to myself, like, I, because to get this, like, to go into this detail, like, I remember putting this out there a long time ago. I had this guy calling me up at, like, 5 in the morning when I'm dead asleep, and this, 2 of those years, I was attending Florida Atlantic University, actually, before I came to L.A., And like, I'd be dead asleep, and I'd have to be up for school or work at the time. And it's like, dude, why are you doing this to me? And it's like, it's just like, and then I remember like later on, I started to catch on. I was kind of putting the pieces together. And I remember like, I was doing like a little bit of my detective work. And then when the calls were coming in and in a lot again, I then was able to get a tracer to get the calls traced to him. And I found out who the person was. And luckily I was able to get like a report in and all that too. So ever since then, you know, and ever since I put the guy's name and face out there, he hasn't really done much to me anymore, you know, thankfully.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's like, why do people you kind of wonder, like, why do people do these things? Like, what are you trying to achieve out of this?
Yeah.
Like I said, like the music scene, like in heavy metal, it's like, when I first got into the music scene, I thought it was, you know, a haven for all people with the same interests and purpose to come in together, and boy, was I wrong about that. Yeah. But you know, it's like, I'm not saying all people in the scene are that way. There's a lot of good people I've met too. There's no doubt about that. But there's always those people out there you want to, like, you know, keep an eye out for, because like there's these people that, if they see that you're doing something with yourself, if they see that you've got potential to be something, they see that as a threat. And I don't know if that was like the case with me. Because like when I was like in the Buffalo music scene, and that's where like a lot of these negative people came from, a lot of people, you know, would say such and such about me. And honestly, here I am now. I went on to study film at Florida Atlantic University.